Good morning. It's 9 a.m. on the West Coast, January 25th, still 2013. Happy Friday. And welcome to Hey, It's a Sports Show. I'm your host, Lance Robbins. We're going to start today's show off talking some Major League Baseball trades. The big trade yesterday was the Arizona Diamondbacks unloading unhappy Justin Full of Talent Upton to the Atlanta Braves for a bunch of prospects, pitchers, and position players. What I want to do today is look at that tremendous sounding outfield in Upton, and Hayward. BJ obviously signed a big lucrative contract to play center field through free agency. Hayward, a big-time Braves prospect who they brought up, and he looks like a true, at least a five-hitter in most lineups. The problem here is you're bringing in a lot of strikeouts to your outfield, and I wonder who are these guys going to hit in other than solo home runs. So let's take a closer look with something we like to call the splits. The splits. Brought to you by bananas. Bananas. We've got potassium. Now, the name The Splits may throw you off there because we're actually combining some things here. We're going to look at the combined total statistical output in major categories for Upton, and Hayward in 2012. Yes, only 2012. Because that just happened. Their combined batting average is a smoking 265. 265 doesn't sound that bad if you're hitting in a ton of RBIs and home runs, but they had a combined 72 home runs. Hayward and BJ, the older brother Upton, did hit 27 and 28, and Justin, who's supposed to have the most talent between the three of them, possibly, had a very off-putting 17. I don't think he's going to put out that kind of output this season, but you still have to question who are they going to hit in. And they had a combined 227 RBIs last year, which BJ did bat in the second spot quite often. But you're still looking at a team that isn't exactly proven. This is still a bunch of guys who have played Major League Baseball for enough years, but we're still talking about potential. And maybe the three of them together, that's going to read combine, and that's going to create that statistics instead of potential. We'll see. Combined, they had a 329 on base percentage, which is a nice bump from the 265 average. Most likely, you're going to see these guys hit near each other or right next to each other with the addition of Brian McCann slotted somewhere in there. So you wonder, you traded Martin Prado, who could have moved into third base or left field for the Braves, and you lost Chipper Jones, and now that there's no more outfield spots, you can't re-sign Michael Bourne. Those three guys led the Braves in on-base percentage last season, followed by Dan Uggla, who somehow can strike out 168 times and still post a decent on-base percentage, but because of his 94 walks. The guy who has a nice career on-base percentage is the catcher Brian McCann, and he's got an on-base percentage of 350, but the expression runs like a catcher, well, it's going to be runs like a catcher coming off an injury for McCann. And here's the thing. I know it's a shoulder injury, but McCann is not the fleetest of foot. If you're putting him in the two spot, you still wonder who's going to bat leadoff in that lineup. If he's in the two spot and any of the Uptons or Haywards are batting behind him and he singles and they follow him with maybe a triple, a chance for a triple, you're talking about a double and a runner on third. You know, like these guys can catch up can make up 90 feet on McCann easily. The big question for me for the Diamondbacks is, yeah, you got a big haul back, but Randall Delgado, who did show nice signs, he had a stint in May as a starter where he put up some nice numbers over a three-game stretch where he allowed only three runs in three starts, and he averaged over six innings in those three starts. But the rest is pretty shaky. Obviously, he's got the stuff, but where is this trade leaning to the Diamondbacks? Does Delgado have to be a two or a three starter, or does he have to be a potential number one starter? And how good is Upton going to be next to Upton in the outfield? Obviously, defensively, it looks amazing. You know, one of the Braves pitchers already made a comment about how it's not, he's sad to see Prado go, but it's a pretty nice thing, a pretty nice view to look over his shoulder and see those three guys. And more baseball news, we're talking the Chicago Cubs making another move. And it's not because I'm a huge Cubs fan that I bring this up. I bring this up because it's a odd move in baseball. The Chicago Cubs have every team has a 40-man roster, and they're protected. So other teams can't go after these guys, and that includes your top prospects for most part. The Cubs signed a relief pitcher who could technically compete for the fifth spot in the rotation, in Villanueva, and he's the 41st person on the roster, but he is expected to make the 25-man roster and be on the team, and he definitely got the contract for that. So with the signing of Scott Hairston, the play-all-positions in the outfield veteran with a little bit of pop, who is actually against the on-base percentage philosophy, he actually brings a pretty terrible one, but he's a good clubhouse guy. He becomes the 42nd person on this roster, and the Cubs have already lost a left-handed reliever named Jeff Beliveau, who has been one of their top prospects, pitching prospects, for a while, and he finally got called up, and he looked like he could be a future lefty setup man. That's if he can throw strikes. So the question is there another move here, or do the Chicago Cubs brass not know how to do math? This is a team that's trying to build around young prospects. But if you lose someone protected because you signed a right-handed bat for the outfield, that doesn't really equal out. So I'm wondering if the Baltimore Orioles, who it sounds like they're losing out on Jason Kubel there from the Diamondbacks, as the Diamondbacks, as I just said, moved Justin Upton. So as these dominoes start falling, are we looking at a potential Alfonso Soriano trade? I mean, this has been rumored for a whole century, I believe. I think we've been rumoring Alfonso Soriano trades away from the Cub before he was a Cub. The Orioles are a good fit. They are looking for a veteran presence who has a big bat and who can play a little outfield and obviously fill the DH. Right now, they have Wilson Bedement penciled in as a DH, and that's not actually a bad bat. He actually has been productive for them, and he can play third base still and first. I think everybody can play first base. But that's the news ahead. I'm scratching my head on that one. In NBA news, the New Orleans Hornets have officially announced that they will be switching their nickname to the Pelicans. Now, this is an underrated move. A lot of people are laughing. I think we grew up with cartoon pelicans, and we don't understand that this is a big bird who eats fish. This is a big bird that can swoop down in one move and take out a whole family of fish in his giant throat pouch. This is a fierce bird that makes a lot of noise. It just happens to look very goofy and sound very goofy. For me, when you change the nickname of your team or you decide on it with a new franchise, there's some things to weigh. You have to have damage control. When you name a team the Kings, if they don't play tough, because we're in America and we just pretend to be feminists, we will make fun of that team and call them the Queens. What can you call the Pelicans? There's always the abbreviation. You can call them the Pels. That doesn't even make sense. You can call them the Cans. If they're playing like cans and they're called the Pelicans, that's just an easy one. You're setting yourself up. Obviously, as I said before, that bird has been mocked in many forms, especially in cartoons. So I understand why it's not a popular name. That move, oddly enough, has spurned another move. The rumor is the Charlotte Bobcats have decided to move or change their name back to the Hornets, which I applaud that. I miss those days with Muggsy Bogues and Mourning and Larry Johnson. So it brings back fond memories. But it also makes me think, what other teams should be affected by this? If you don't like the Pelicans, what would you name the New Orleans Hornets currently? What's New Orleans known for? Partying? Jazz music? Hey, let's keep going with these nickname changes and go and steal the Utah Jazz and move it back to New Orleans where it belongs. As I've mentioned before, Utah Jazz does not make sense. Los Angeles Lakers does not make sense. So here's some thoughts. Utah, if New Orleans has an extra second round pick, can we do a second round pick for the name Jazz to New Orleans? Is that possible? Are the GMs creative enough to make that happen? Also, the Major League Soccer team in Utah, Salt Lake City, they're called Real Salt Lake, spelled real, pronounced Real, and that comes from the Spanish Premier League's España, and it really just means royal, so Royal Salt Lake, even though there's no royalty there. Can we put the Utah Jazz in Utah and have the New Orleans Real Jazz in New Orleans? Or is that too much jazz? I know in the Canadian Football League, they had like 15 Wildcats or Mustangs or something of that nature, but they recycled team names. So let me know at LanceRobinSports@yahoo.com. That's LanceRobinS sports@yahoo.com. Shoot me an email or just go to the Facebook page. Hey, it's a sports show with Lance Robbins. And light up that comment wall. And I'd like to thank all the listeners who listen and also like the page. In other NBA news, I want to say congrats to Luol Deng. Lieutenant Deng. Deng! Making the All-Star Reserve with his teammate, Joakim, you know it, Noah. Very, very deserving there. There were some snubs, in my opinion, but very deserving were all the All-Stars. That's always a tough one. And before I change the subject, go too far away from the subject, I did have one other nickname. And that's if Utah wanted to trade away the name Jazz, which makes so much sense. They have a big Mormon population in Utah. What? No way. Yes, they do. How about the Utah Special Underwears? This is a real thing. Google.com, have you heard of that? Go ahead. Mormon special underwear. Real thing. And I think that would make the team play harder. I got my first request, a topic request, and that was from a listener, in Ohio. His name is Neil Paddle. And he asks, can I talk about the New York Knickerbockers? I sure will, Neil. Knickerbockers, Knicks for short, are short pants. Did you know that? That's also a terrible name. So there's another team that needs a new name. Who wants to be the New York Short Pants? You have the biggest media outlet in New York, an infinite amount of fans, and your team is named after a pair of shorts you wear for athletic competitions, such as basketball. No thank you. Moving on to the NFL, Super Bowl, with the Pro Bowl coming up, too. Oh, wait, we don't care about the Pro Bowl. Good job, Commissioner. The Pro Bowl is basically a bunch of guys being voted in who aren't going to play in the game. If you watch the Pro Bowl roster change over the course of the announcement, which is ridiculous, it's announced before the season's over, so you're basically a Pro Bowler, not for a 16-game season, but for like, what is it, 13 or 14-game season by the time the votes are in. The whole process doesn't make sense. But I want to talk about Joe Flacco, everybody's favorite Frankenstein. I'm siding with him on this one. He has always been under scrutiny for the silliest stuff, you know. They criticize him if he throws a pick. They criticize him if he throws 8 touchdowns and 0 interceptions, which he's doing in the postseason. And that's why his team's in the Super Bowl. He's getting the ball downfield. He basically told the media, you know, I'm here. I'm staying here. I don't mind that you talk BS about me. And he made the target on his back a little bigger. And people are saying, well, you know, you're not going to win that battle because they don't see a way to win that battle. You know who's saying that? Other people in the media. That you're not going to win that battle. You know, these cocky, unathletic, terrible sports writers are saying, hey, we're always going to have the last word because we can publish whatever we want. Well, that's the problem there, I think. I'm not a big Twitter guy. I'm not a big social media guy. I understand how it helps promote something like, hey, a podcast. I understand that. There's a contradiction in what I'm saying. But I just find so much criticism by these media pundits is most of it, you know, it's obviously hindsight, which that's completely unfair, first of all. I mean, hey, this is what I would have done because it didn't work. Well, who are you to say so? Secondly, it's absolutely backwards that guys who have never been praised for athletic attributes go out of their way to put out these opinions on a player's performance, and not by analytics or not by what they saw, but purely based on what has happened in the past. They always harp on the same thing for all these players.
Take Jay Cutler.
He's sulking on the sideline. He looks like that. That's what the guy's face looks like. Not everybody's as animated as these big personalities that they want to write about. But they have to write about them. So what do? Harp on the same old thing. Dry up the well. And the thing that really irks me is I really feel these sports writers, I don't think any of them watch the games. If you read their opinion column, which is supposed to be reporting on the game, that you can't... reporting on something is supposed to be unbiased. Let me know what happened in the game. Everything's basically a blog post these days. It's just ridiculous. Anyway, so I'm backing Joe Vlacco. And if you... what I was getting at the social media part is, if you do have a Twitter or you have whatever, and one of your favorite players or a guy that you respect who's a good player and he's unfairly getting criticized for the most microscopic BS, or you think those pundits are full of it, start a campaign and just go after these people. They all have Twitter accounts, you know, and all their bosses read their Twitter and make sure that they have enough followers and blah, 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 blah. You know what? If they're saying, the media is always saying, oh, well, we have the last say. Well, you know what? Those media pundits that have the last say, prove them wrong and just go attack their accounts. Go straight after them, because it's just too much. Also, I'd like to comment on a listener said about my Golden State Warriors broadcast. He was in agreement and thought that the Warriors could actually take the Clippers, which I think would be a good matchup. A lot of youth, a lot of athleticism there. And he also thought the Warriors could overcome the Thunder if Kevin Durant decided to retire. Well, you know, I don't think he's going to retire, so... thank you for that comment, Darren. But I think what's going to happen is LeBron James and Kevin Durant are going to end up kissing babies on their road trips. And I say that because their MVP race is going to be one to watch. That award is worth something this year. You know, somebody's going to be upset and a fan base is going to be upset because it's going to be neck and neck. Those two are above and beyond what you want as your star player on your basketball team. In NHL hockey news, the only news you need to know is that there is a 4-0 team called the Chicago Blackhawks. A great game last night against the Dallas Stars, who showed up to play. Their goalie looked outstanding. He's looked outstanding all season long, but the Stars goalie really shined. He was by far the best player on the ice throughout most of the game. The goals the Hawks scored were fantastic and somewhat lucky, the first goal. If you didn't see the highlights, Duncan Keith made a brilliant save at the end of the second period. The Stars were just threatening like crazy. The Hawks could not get it out of the zone, and the Stars put one between Crawford, five-holed it, I believe. It just squirted through, and Keith, with like 0.6 left on the clock, just tapped, little tap, tap, tappity tapped it just outside of the net. And that actually ended up being a very big play because it went into overtime. And talk about highlights. After a very fast-paced, fun 3-on-3, the Hawks, during the power play in overtime, Patrick Kane made an amazing pass, almost basically a no-look behind the back, great stick handling, pass to Hossa, who's waiting for it on the right side, and he just... Marian Hossa, Norse god of hockey. Game-winning goal. 4-0 Blackhawks. And as Barry Melrose, a very trustworthy analyst, said two things that are very true. The Blackhawks have the best sweaters in the NHL, which he's been saying for years, and it's a very true statement. Go ahead and buy yourself one. And that they're the best team in the league right now. A lot of hockey left. A lot of exciting play on the ice. What to look forward to tonight, UFC on Fox 6 is on Saturday, so tonight is the weigh-ins. And if you like watching dehydrated young men in their underwear make mean faces at each other, this is the event for you. I believe it's on Fuel or something of that nature. And if that's not for you, don't forget to tune in on Saturday, though. UFC on Fox 6 and the prelims on FX. And those same dehydrated young men will be in real tight shorts, hugging each other and punching each other in the face. I hope you all have a great sports-filled weekend. I want to thank my sponsor, Water. Water. It's not just for plants. Until next time, I'm Lance Robbins. Have a great weekend.